episode 21 of the TV News, recorded February 24th, 2015. Reality Bites. So this week we're going to talk about some reality shows.
Yeah, we don't talk about a lot of reality TV.
Nah. Yeah.
Mostly because a lot of it sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even some of the stuff we watch, I'm not, like, saying all of it's the greatest.
No.
Well, I mean,
there's something addictive about the stuff that I watch. I get it.
I mean, for me, if you count, like, HGTV, which I watch all the time, you know, what is it going to talk about with Property Brothers? There's nothing to talk about that, or they're going to fix a kitchen or whatever, other than style, you know, depending on your taste of style. But, like, you know, this, I mean, we don't watch any of the stuff like, you know, the Kardashian sisters or whatever. You know, we don't watch any of that garbage.
Only the commercials I see between Top Chef.
Right. And I don't watch any of the competition shows, really. I mean, I'm off of Face Off. I just got bored by it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't watch The Voice, even though I like singing and all that stuff.
I don't watch The Voice. I don't
American
watch
Idol.
It's so weird that American Idol is still on.
I know.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this thing's going on. And I can't even think who won the last 5 or 6 years.
Right. It was very smart that Simon Cowell kind of left when he did.
Yeah.
But it should have ended before that even.
Yeah.
It's just kind of downhill. But the ones we are talking about are going to be, we're going to talk about some Project Runway, some Top Chef,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of, what was that one you were talking about?
Oh, you mean Best New Restaurant? Best New Restaurant.
And our buddy's Hacking the System.
Yes.
Season 1 is completed.
Just ended its run. Yep.
Yeah. Congratulations to Jason Murphy and Brian Brushwood. But before we get into all of that, guys, we got a little bit of house cleaning to do. And first things first is our iTunes shoutouts. We got a couple of them over on our iTunes store. You go there, you give us 5-star rating, always 5, never 4, 3, 2, or 1.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be a jerk. And write us a little review and we'll read it here on the show. First one comes from Bammer100. He says, people said they were crazy. People said it was an impossible task. People said they would die trying. But four men, Grant Davis, Randy Lander, Gregory, J. Amani Smith, and the late, great Johnny Neal.
Late?
Well, he's not here on the show lately.
Wait, you didn't even read that right.
Oh, I actually threw out Gregory something Smith.
That's great. I love that. That's great.
Known across the land as the TV dudes, stepped up to do the impossible. Conquer TV one show at a time. But the sexual tensions between the group might destroy them and their divine intentions of reviewing TV. Greg can't keep his hands off of Grant. Randy can't keep his hands off of Greg. And Grant can't keep his hands off himself. And Johnny Neal is nowhere to be seen. He has his own task, a task that might be even grander and more important than the TV dude's task of conquering TV. Johnny Neal is looking for evidence to bring down Rupert Murdoch and stop him from spreading the evil poison known as milk. But if there's one man in this world who can stop Murdoch, it is Johnny Neal. Because he's a werewolf. Will the TV dudes find success? Will Johnny Neal survive and bring down the milk conspiracy? Tune in to find out.
I hope
that's awesome.
I hope there are potential new listeners that go click. Well, let's see what the reviews are. What the hell is that? What was that?
I guess I'll have to never listen to this show.
Well, you know what? That's reminiscent for me of, like, I'm a big fan of Tony Kornheiser, and so if you don't listen to him, like the fans, they have like all these things when you listen to him that make sense only to you. All those insights. Like, he always talks about the traffic in DC or something, and nobody really care about unless you listen to the show. That is passionate. B. Hammer. I love
it. That was fantastic.
It was great. Thank you.
It One Podcast to Rule Them All.
Yeah, I like that.
And our other one is from 86H Goog. I hope I'm saying that right. Goad, actually. Listening con mucho gusto, he writes as the title. While I only jumped in at the Rage Select crossover event, premium foil cover appreciated, this podcast has grown on me quickly. Herpes? Oh, no.
I like this.
The exchanges between the hosts balanced with the quality content are what give podcasts a complete but episodic nature. These three goofs have just the right approach with a thoughtful examination of the medium peppered with their brand of humor. If you enjoy Rage Select, How Did This Get Made, Smodcast, or Pornhub, this podcast is for you.
I strive to be like Pornhub.
Yeah,
if
that's
you can be at that echelon.
Yeah, that's one of the more interesting comparisons I've ever been a part of.
Oh boy,
that's good.
Well, thank you guys for that once again. And if you guys could go there to iTunes and help give us a shout out, that does help us out. You could also go to Stitcher, I'd point out.
Yes.
Which, for any of our international listeners, we got an email from one of our listeners, which I'm about to read. Mm-hmm. He points out within the email, it's a long email, so I'll just kind of skip that later. But he points out that a lot of people don't use an iPhone, which is iTunes kind of rolled in.
What are the animals?
We're also on there, so go check that out. And maybe next week I'll pull up some Stitcher reviews.
You know, that's funny because I always, because we're in the Apple universe, I never think, I was like, what the hell is Stitcher?
Oh, my wife's an Android user, and she uses Downcast.
Okay, so I have no idea, something else exists outside of iTunes?
Yes, any podcast you're using that uses reviews, please give us 5-star reviews anywhere you're listening to us. We will very much appreciate them.
Yeah, we'll take them everywhere.
Yeah, post. Let us know. We'll read them out. We'll appreciate the shout-outs.
I guess you might want to mail us, admin@thetvdudes.com, review
us on Amazon. Just go review a product and mention the TV Dudes. Right. We'll cover that.
And if you can make it into like,
shameless.
And if you can make it into some kind of fan fiction like this, that's even better. And we can string them all together and put it in an anthology or something.
The TV Dudes universe.
Yes,
can
I like that.
Can you buy milk off of Amazon? I would
love to be yeah. TV if you just start putting TV reviews in milk, that'd be fantastic.
Oh,
or the movie Milk.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. There you go. Well, we did get an email from one of our listeners, Bane Djokic. I hope I'm saying that right. As well, he says, "Hey dudes and Grant, I am writing you from Republic of Srpska, from a small town of Trebinje.
I'm sure you're not saying any of this right.
Yes. You're making me work here near the Adriatic coast." He talks about, I guess it's from Croatia. He talks about ending up kind of coming across our podcast while listening to a tech show that Brian Brushwood is on, which led to Corey Coleman and Spill. Mm-hmm. Yep. And kind of, you steamrolled us.
Yeah, I see how you get there.
Yeah.
Welcome. He says, "You guys are big fans of comedy, and I'm going to recommend two great British comedies, both made by Channel 4. Friday Night Dinner and Man Down. How are you going to watch it if it's not legally available in the U.S. is up to you. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge." It says, "Finally, this conspiracy about milk needs to stop. Because this is the new Coca-Cola milk campaign. See photos below," which he attached for us. "This is no longer a conspiracy. This is true." "Why are they pushing milk everywhere? What is going on? This is getting obnoxious." Anyway, he posts these images and like it's... this big campaign with all these women wearing dresses made of milk.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen this. It's pretty good campaign.
I mean, it's no Larry like the cancer lung guy, but now, it's still pretty good.
I believe, I could be wrong, I think the conspiracy is to prevent osteoporosis, but I know that I should look deeper. Probably.
Keep looking.
I'll keep looking.
Zoom in, enhance.
Yeah. And if you see in Croatia, maybe see Johnny Neal is actually in Russia with Edward Snowden now. And so he's popping up. And we're going to be, hopefully that documentary on Johnny Neal will be coming out. We'll win Oscar next year.
Cross your fingers.
Yes. Citizen 5.
Citizen 5.
The sequel.
Citizen 5 milk.
So we got a few questions from our listeners as well. They liked us on Facebook and on Twitter. And that's where you can kind of follow along to ask us questions. First one comes from Michael Scally. He says, "Let's just nip this Power Rangers dealy right in the bud, shall we? Thoughts on gritty reboot trends. Best and worst examples." And so, if you guys don't know...
I didn't know, but I think it's a fan film, right?
There's about an 11-minute fan film that was released today. It had Katie Sackhoff and James Vanderbeek in it. And it's actually really well made, so I guess it can't be too much of a fan film if it's...
Well, it's a guy who just makes these. He's done like one for Judge Dredd and Punisher.
Same guy who did the Mortal Kombat one too.
Maybe so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, I hadn't thought about it. Maybe that's who it is.
Maybe.
Here's the thing. I never watched Power Rangers. I think Power Rangers is kind of silly. Sorry, Matt Franke, for listening.
Yeah.
But
he's not listening.
It's I didn't. I never plugged in. I was too old for it. I never plugged into it. So I don't really care if they gritty reboot it.
Yeah.
On that specific one.
But what do you think of gritty reboots?
In general, I'm not a fan. As you know, I don't like the gritty superhero movies. I am not a gritty reboot kind of guy.
Huh.
There have been, I'm sure there are exceptions. I can't think of one. But I'm sure there are exceptions to that rule that I liked. I'm trying to think what the worst example was of gritty reboots.
I don't think I've ever seen one. I know what they are, but I don't care because they're usually of things I don't care about.
Like
the Power Rangers, I'm with you, Randy. I did not watch them. I was too old for them. Yeah. I thought they were just this weird thing. I had no idea what they were. Well, it was bizarre.
It's also more of a movie and comic thing than it is a TV thing. I don't think it's going to do it in TV, right?
What would they do? What have they done in Gritty Reboot?
What's a TV thing that was a gritty reboot? Yeah. I can't think of any.
Grimm?
Grimm?
Like it kind of took
maybe
fabled things and kind of made
except
a
that always was kind of dark. You know, it's Grimm's fairy tales.
Oh wait, okay. So you're talking about like taking something and
taking a established property, making it a little bit more adult,
darker, more realistic.
I'm thinking like it was just like a bad production wise. Okay,
like the first Batman movie.
Was obviously quite a
shift in tone from what people were used to in the Adam West.
Was that more?
That might be a gritty reboot.
But isn't that kind of from? What was the big reboot, the comic reboot of Batman?
Dark Knight Returns.
So, I mean, it was kind of from
Frank
that.
Frank Miller definitely. Frank
Miller. Right. Like those?
In comic, Frank Miller and Alan Moore paved the way for Grimm and Gritty. I mean, that was very much a term. And I like both of those, although in retrospect, I like Frank Miller's stuff less. So as I go back and read, I'm like, oh, this is not as good as I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
But
maybe you just don't like him as much.
Yeah, that's true, too. But even Alan Moore has acknowledged that what happened is that he sort of paved the way for people to start doing this stuff, and most of them didn't have the talent to pull it off.
Right.
It got away
and
from
it just get it just gets to be. I mean, oh, I know what the worst. I mean, I can't say what in comics, but the worst example for me is Identity Crisis in DC Comics. I hate that. I physically hate that comic book.
It makes you ill.
It makes me ill. Makes me angry.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of am interested. I'm always interested when they make an attempt. Like, I'm interested in what they're doing with Daredevil, especially since it seems to be a little bit of departure from tone of the rest of the Marvel cinematic universe right now.
Yeah.
That's definitely a gritty version that they're showing.
And that's in keeping with the comics, because again, Frank Miller, that was the gritty version of Daredevil.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's been a bright, cheerful version of Daredevil as well.
Hmm. Yeah, so, absolutely.
One might be a good example.
Have they have done anything with Spider-Man? I mean, I know comic-wise they have, but in movies they have. Or any visual medium they
I'm trying to think. In TV...
Spider-Man movie 3.
Yeah.
I guess
so. Where he goes emo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the explanation some people say. It's like, he went emo, and that's like the worst that Peter Parker knows how to go. He's not a bad guy.
Right.
I'm like, that's funny. But still, that movie.
Yeah, it's funny. It's such a trend in comics and movies, but I can't think of anything off the top of my TV.
Yeah. Nothing's really jumping in my mind.
No, I can't. Well, you'd be like, what? Well, they could have done one if Eddie Murphy decided to be Bill Cosby, like a fucked up version of the Cosby Show.
I know a TV gritty reboot that's coming. They're doing Archie. They're doing Archie as a sort of a teen drama.
Oh, really?
And that I'm actually interested in. I think that could work.
I'd watch that.
They're working on that for Fox, I think.
Ooh, I'd watch that.
Yeah.
I'm still loving Greg's idea that they redo the Cosby Show, but with Eddie Murphy. It's really dark and messy.
Actually, or you could do any TV star every TV star that's fallen, you do that character like the TV star. So you do like Beretta as like some really bad guy who shoots girlfriends or something like that. That'd be a way to do it.
What about maybe a show within a show where it's the Cosby Show, and then when they go behind the scenes, they show Eddie Murphy playing him and just going around on drugging people.
Yeah. See, I think that
might be libel.
I'd watch that. Or if not drugging people, paying people off.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, it's not that nothing happened. Something happened.
Actually, you know what? That'd be an interesting bit of social justice. I want to make a show about a guy who played a TV dad in the 80s.
Yes.
Who now is like going, and you go around showing how he enforces his will on people.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be Bill Cosby.
Jack Horseman.
It wouldn't be Bill Cosby. It'd be this other guy who was in the 80s. It's not Bill Cosby. What are you talking about?
It'll be Will Crosby. All right. Next question comes from Dennis McElwain. He says, what is the worst experience you've had with a TV Dudes fan? I'm drinking a tall, cool glass of milk while I'm writing this, he says.
I've only met nice TV Dudes fans.
Yeah, I've never...
I'm trying to think. I don't think we've ever had one.
No.
No.
And we're not asking for one either.
We've had a whole lot of interaction with our listeners, but we had that one time where they all came over to our house and some of them were on the show.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was great.
I've only had good interactions with fans. I mean, we say this now, one of them is going to kidnap us and put us in a basement just to get him in on the podcast. But
I mean, even in our comments, we haven't really had anything negative.
Sometimes there's a little
discussion
we have discussion.
It's like really cool.
Yeah. You know what? I will say this. I think our TV Dude fans are the most mature people on the internet because we can totally disagree and it doesn't go anywhere nasty. It doesn't go anywhere bad. It's just like, okay, we have different tastes and this is why. But nobody's ever like, I hate you, fuck you guys. I don't think anybody's ever cursed at us at all. You know?
We're not inviting this, by the way. You don't need to.
Exactly. Rise up.
We need a villain.
And I actually really appreciate that because, I mean, everybody knows that people troll the internet for all sorts of shit and nobody really trolls us. And I like that. Thank you. And I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Kind of great. All right, and our next one is from Kyle Volte. He's wanting to know if any of us have watched Bosch on Amazon and wondering what our thoughts. And should they do a shared universe with Lincoln Lawyer series as well?
Now, okay, I don't know if... Is that a comic?
Is it the same guy?
Or is that
guy?
A book?
No, Lincoln Lawyer, it must be the same book, same guy.
Okay.
Matthew McConaughey was in the movie.
Well, I didn't see that movie.
I have not read the books. I've saw the first half of the pilot on Amazon. Right. And thought, okay, I liked it as Welliver, but this is just a procedural show. It's not doing anything for me. So I don't think I'm likely to go back while the TV is this
It got
packed.
Renewed.
I know.
Well, is it all the episodes up?
The whole season is up.
The whole series is up. I want to catch up with it. It's just, there's so much stuff. I mean, you know, it's just, I don't even know how I'm going to watch all of House of Cards that's coming out on this Friday. So
I still haven't seen season two.
Yeah, so there you go. But, What I saw, Kyle, I liked, but I'm a procedural guy that's like in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And I do want to know where that story goes because I care about that murder mystery. But I don't know. I mean, I will report back later on when I've seen the whole series, I think.
All right. One last question before we take a break. This comes from Chris Hatfield, who says, Fox's Empire is a smash success. This question is a little subjective, but what do you guys think makes this show so successful? Is it the new Scandal TV trend making the new trend of the new agey soap opera drama, whatever?
I believe it's that.
I kind of butchered your question, sorry, dude.
I believe it's that, and I do think there is like a racial component of like trashy, but soap opery stuff that like African Americans can relate to. Almost like comedy with what's his face, Tyler Perry stuff, but like Shonda Rhimes and I don't know who does Empire, but there's something about it, like the glitz, the glamour, and just enough of that culture is on there that people can relate to. Plus, they are unbelievably great on the internet. I mean, on Twitter. Like, whenever I got it up, I don't watch the shows, but it's like I follow the stupid shows because everybody in my Twitter feed follows it. And the stars get on and tweet about it.
Well, the characters kind of play a little bit over the top, but still a little bit believable. They have these kind of, these twists, these hooks at the end. They kind of want you wanting more and keep coming back. And, I mean, it is kind of trashy soap opera in a way that's like,
and it hasn't
really
been
engaging.
And it has, and it's not terribly deep. I mean, Mad Men and Justified are like a little bit more, I would say, just, you know, you can, that's why people say they're slow.
Yeah, it's welcoming, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
To general audiences. And I mean, not to sound make that sound like condescending.
No, it's
an easy one to kind of jump in and out of, I think. And it's got pretty good music.
It's also got a good cast. Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard.
From what I hear, the woman who plays his wife is great.
They are great. I mean, and you can't underestimate having really great talent, and I'm happy for it. And that's why, you know, I got attacked on my Facebook a little bit by Mr. Milk about, I said, I didn't watch any of the movies. I said, TV's really where it's at for the diversity.
Yep.
And he was like,
is Mr. Milk Johnny?
Yeah.
Hey, no, we're calling him Mr.
Milk. I called him Mr. Milk. I was like, Johnny, what are you talking about? Well, how can you be, because of the nominees and stuff, I'm like, listen, man, you've got all these shows where they're showing like all sorts of different cultures that, you know, whether it's Shonda Rhimes or whether it's even in Justified when you just got like people who look different, even like Boyd and like that, you know, the economic element of that. You don't see that shit in movies like that all the time.
Yeah.
And I like seeing, you know, that's just Justified. You can see it in all the different shows. And I like that. I think
the movie industry is still afraid to take risks.
Exactly.
And those risks include deviating to they want their white male leads.
Yes.
Because they have these metrics that, like, they'll get us these numbers on our investment. And I think they're just kind of afraid to deviate from that, and it's a shame.
What's funny is it's the art part. It's like the Oscar projects, though, because you look at something like this, like blockbusters, like I'm trying to think, like Guardians of the Galaxy, Winter Soldier, the big blockbusters,
the largest movies
are more diverse.
Totally.
I mean, they went out of their way to. I mean,
well, that's the thing about books on comics that I got to that. Like, I didn't read a lot of comics, but the thing I always liked about them is that they were like mirrors of social justice or social stuff that was going on that people would totally dismiss comics. I'm like, that's stupid because, okay, maybe it was drawn and maybe you weren't into the way it was presented to you, but what they're talking about, these are all metaphors.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, the raccoons and trees in Hollywood are not getting a lot of parts these days. And it's a lot of the bigotry of it.
Well, I was disgusted that Groot was not up for a supporting actor nomination because that is just plain old sentient human racism.
That'd be so funny. Somebody needs to make that movie.
He delivered the best monologue I've ever heard.
Well, it was a little wooden.
Oh, somebody needs to do that movie, like the squirrels and like the trees from like Lord of the Rings, who are injured in making a film or whatever. That'd be great.
You know what? Remember the Nut Job? I don't think that was up for Best Animated Oscar. What's up? You too good for vermin and trees, Hollywood?
That's awesome. It's just one of those days where you don't want to wake up. Everything is fucked. Everybody sucks. You don't really know why, but you want to justify ripping someone's head off. No human contact. And if you interact, your life is on contract. Your best bet is to stay away, motherfucker. It's just one of those days. It's all about the he says, she says bullshit. I think you better quit. Let the shit slip, or you'll be leaving with a fat lip. I hope you know I pack a chainsaw. What? A chainsaw. What? A motherfucking chainsaw. What? It's all about the he says, she says bullshit. I think you better quit talking that shit. So come and get it. All right, so it's time for the news, and we'll jump right to the first thing, I think. We all talked about Man in the High Castle from Amazon. Yep.
It has been no surprise order to a series.
Yep.
I believe
Mad
they
Dogs.
Have a sometime between the end of this year and early 2016. They also added Mad Dogs and the New Yorker Presents.
Was that like a documentary thing? I didn't watch any of those.
I have no idea.
Was Red Oaks added yet? Was it called Red Oaks?
Oh, wait. I thought they were going to do Mozart in the Jungle.
Mozart in the Jungle is getting a season 2.
Right. Oh, okay.
Red Oaks may not have gotten picked up because I don't remember hearing anything about it.
Huh.
I really like that other one where they shot in Paris. I like that with Chloe Sevigny? Yeah. It's a really cute story.
They have also announced that Jim Starlin, creator of Thanos, among other things, his creator-owned sci-fi epic Dreadstar has been optioned for a TV show. He's going to be writing it.
Now, are you familiar with this character?
Yes.
Of course you are. What do you like, run a comic book shop?
It's a weird book. I mean, you thought Guardians was odd.
Yeah.
This is a weird book to be adapting. It's 90s comic book. I mean, it's sort of got its roots in sort of Buck Rogers and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It seems a little. A little bit like Star Wars-y.
It's definitely that kind of thing. But this was a book that went through a lot. It went through several different publishers.
Mm-hmm.
It changed characters. It's a very odd book to be bringing into TV. I don't quite know how the budget's going to work for that.
So what their little description on this news article says, this is a sprawling space opera focused on Vanth Dreadstar, last survivor of the Milky Way galaxy, and his adventures amidst a war between two titanic empires.
You know how people say, that sounds very comic booky?
Yeah.
And I'm like, don't use comic book as a derogatory term. That sounds pretty comic booky.
It does. It,
yeah.
Vanth Dreadstar.
Vanth Dreadstar. I kind of love
like,
the name.
With a name like that, you're going to be the last survivor.
Yes.
It's too badass not to to live.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is a he's working with Universal Cable Productions. It's a first look deal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pilot. It's definitely still very early in development. This is more of a Starlin got an option and the news got out.
So it might be NBC.
It might be nothing.
It might be nothing. Oh, sound weird though.
But it's interesting, and I believe this is largely because he was the guy who created Drax and Thanos.
Okay,
so you know I'm sure that sort of got him his name in the door. There is a new trailer for Wayward Pines, which is a TV show based on the novel Pines by Blake Crouch. Matt Dillon is in it as a Secret Service agent investigating the disappearance of two other agents when he finds himself trapped in a small town that seems friendly enough, but is actually far more sinister than its outward appearance suggests. There's a twist, which you might guess, because the director is M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, no.
See, it's like everything about this, I go, oh, that's interesting. Yep. And then I see his name, and I'm like, ah. He's burned so many bridges.
Yeah, he really has.
Well, now he's at least to, I guess, putting him on TV instead of giving him money for movies.
The show co-stars Melissa Leo, Terrence Howard, Carla Gugino, Toby Jones, and Juliette Lewis.
That's a big cast.
That's a great cast.
He gets like, it's funny because he always has had really good cast in his movies, or like powerhouse actors that seem to want to work with him, and then they do this thing, and maybe shooting it, it doesn't feel weird to them, but then you look at it like, what is this?
So, I don't know if you guys had a chance to check out the trailer.
I did not.
But I took a look at it, and it looks really good. I mean, like the cinematography, the style, lighting, all that, it looks really slick.
I'm going to have to at least give this a shot.
And, there's something intriguing about the whole thing. This news article kind of relates it to Twin Peaks and The Prisoner, and I can totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just
Shyamalan,
but it's an adaptation of a book. It's not his own original crap.
Yeah,
which is encouraging. And I don't know.
Well, it starts Thursdays, May 14th on Fox.
Okay,
I'm interested.
So worth a look. Speaking of Fox,
yes.
So they picked up a pilot based on the DC Comics Vertigo book Lucifer, starring Lucifer. And it's a great comic, by the way. It's a spinoff from Sandman, one of the best comics ever done. It's Lucifer gets tired of running hell, so he basically hangs it up.
Yeah,
opens a piano bar, and then gets drawn back into all this intrigue of with the Asgardians, and like he goes and he gets on a ship made of dead man's fingernails from Norse mythology.
That's cool.
He's dealing with Loki, the other Lord of Lies.
Right.
It's really good. So what Fox has done is that
they're clipping his wings, so to speak.
The TV series centers around Lucifer, who's grown bored and restless as Lord of Hell. He abdicates his throne and leaves behind his kingdom to head for Los Angeles. So far, pretty much what I described.
Right.
Where he helps the LAPD punish bad guys. Are you fucking kidding me?
That's ridiculous.
They're so afraid to deviate from formula.
I mean, I'm to some extent, I'm sort of impressed that they're going to put the devil as a lead, as a protagonist on there. That's going to be fun to watch.
That's weird.
It's going to be fun to watch the reaction of that. But you're actually having the devil solve crimes with his partner, a cop. This is what if it was like Bones, but instead of one of them being a forensic psychologist who works in who's a writer, what if it was the Lord of All Evil?
Right.
It's a lot like Castle, but instead of a writer joining up with a cop, it's the Lord of Lies.
So I mean,
who greenlit this change. What is wrong with them?
That's, I don't know.
I would love to see a Lucifer Jerry show Bruckheimer, based on the comics.
Oh, there you go.
I just, you know, there used to be a game running around where you do the, you know, one thing and one, you say, this guy does this, and together they fight crime.
Right.
This is the ultimate winning version. You cannot top. One of them is an LAP detective. The other one is the actual fallen angel Lucifer. Together they fight crime.
Well, what if you have Jesus? What if you have Jesus and Lucifer?
Jesus and Lucifer. Good. That's a show. I'd watch
Jesus
that show.
Jesus and Lucifer. Just
Jesus
hanging
and Lucifer,
out.
Time traveling cops.
Yeah,
I would watch that show.
Time traveling cops.
Yeah, that'd be great. Because
one's a werewolf.
One's a werewolf. Yeah, Lucifer. He's a werewolf.
Yeah.
I saw this. I was excited for about 5 seconds, and I saw what it was, and now I'm horrified.
And what's funny is that apparently the whole show, when it was initially pitched, mm-hmm. was going to be having a Lucifer running a piano bar called Lux. Uh-huh. And it looks like some exec came in who's like, all right, we got to make one little tweak here.
Yeah.
Instead of that piano bar, he's solving crime with cops.
All right, look, I know this is not the place, time and place to debate religion, but if the devil really existed, do you believe that executive would still be alive right now? No. He would have cancer of the dick that would have killed him.
Oh, boy.
So I think we talked a little bit about this, that Jon Stewart's leaving The Daily Show.
Yes.
Oh, is he? Yeah, and what? That there's a lot of maybe a scramble to lock up potential replacements.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe that was giving a little juice to anybody who might want to leave in The Daily Show. Well, Jason Jones and Samantha Bee just signed a contract to be comedy stars on TBS.
Mm.
Ooh, thank goodness.
I mean, everyone who's working on The Daily Show must just be thanking Jon Stewart every day. Like, thank you for helping me raise my profile and get a deal.
I wonder if it's kind of what's going on is he's like, hey, I'm going to leave, but before I leave, I'm totally going to hook you guys up with other positions elsewhere.
Yeah.
What do you want to do?
Yeah.
You want to pitch that show? I'm going to put my name on it as well. We're going to go in there
because,
get this done for
because
you.
Everybody's locking these people down so they don't throw their hat in the ring to replace Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
Right.
And once again, a little certain Aisha Tyler is still available, I
hope. But here's the thing. I really like Jason Jones, Samantha Bee.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Jones in his comedy work has never been as good as he is as a correspondent. And Samantha Bee, I haven't seen a lot of her besides correspondent work. They mm-hmm. have not clicked outside of being correspondents. I love both of them. I'm not sure a TBS sitcom is where I want them to be
mm-hmm.
because it's executive produced by them. It stars Jason Jones as a dad taking his family on a road trip.
Okay.
I'm not sure that's great.
It's called Vacation. National Lampoon's Vacation.
Yeah.
I don't know about this.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But I didn't want them to take over the helm. And I think it would be good for there to be a new slate and a new group that kind of takes mm-hmm. it over. I think that if you're kind of left with the baggage of everyone from the old cast, you can't bring anything new to the table.
Well, here's a question. What's Eddie Murphy doing right now? He could probably... wait.
As Cosby, as head of Daily Show.
I'd watch that.
I'd watch this. It.
I know Chevy Chase has always wanted to host some talk show. I'm sure he's pretty much free.
Those two together.
Chevy Chase, Eddie Murphy playing Bill Cosby.
Them playing a two-headed guy.
Yes. A two-headed Bill Cosby, Chevy Chase monster.
And then, the two worst talk shows in the history of talk shows. Chevy Chase and the Magic Johnson Hour.
Oh,
and I love Magic.
I forgot
Johnson.
About Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson could be one of their crew. He could be a correspondent. Their lead basketball correspondent.
Oh, he'd be terrible. But you know who would be interesting to do it, but he will never do it because it works too much for him. It'd be Charles Barkley. I watch Charles Barkley do it. Charles Barkley is hilarious.
Okay, that'd be nuts.
Hear me out.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Daily Show.
Uh-huh.
Run by the two-headed monster that is Eddie Murphy playing Bill Cosby what else did we say?
Who Chevy
we say?
Chase.
Chevy Chase. Those are the two heads.
Chase playing himself.
Chevy's playing himself. They're a two-headed monster.
Mm-hmm.
They're the leads. Magic Johnson and Charles Barkley are correspondents.
Okay. Right.
Dennis Miller is their correspondent, because why not bring him in too?
Yeah, where's that guy then?
And Craig and Kilborn? Then finally, a
he's
werewolf.
Grow back out his power mullet.
Yeah.
And a werewolf.
And a werewolf. I'd watch that show.
What I think is kind of sad about this whole article, by the way, the article is headlined... here's why Jason Jones and Samantha Bee will not be replacing Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. There is one line about poor Jason Jones' new show on TBS, mm-hmm. and the rest of the article is about what's going on in The Daily Show.
Jon Stewart, yeah.
It's like, oh, you poor bastard.
Well, good riddance.
Yeah. I
shouldn't say that. I know you like
them. I like both those guys.
I think they're okay. They were never my favorite correspondents. But all right, let's take a break. We'll come talk about TV. You guys want to start with
reality?
Just reality.
Reality. Let's talk about reality.
All right. How about this Top Chef show that you guys have been talking about?
All right. Yeah. So it's weird to me, Grant, I've watched all of Top Chef.
Me,
which you were the one who dragged me into that.
And me too. And you stopped watching.
And you haven't watched any of it this season. You watched like two episodes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I know I started the season.
You
this
hooked
one's
me
in Boston, right?
Yeah. In Boston. Yeah.
And something about it wasn't as good as usual, and kind of dropped off of it. And in fact, I started watching Project Runway All-Stars and got really into that instead.
See, it's
that was the one I wanted to watch.
I flipped because I started watching All-Stars. I've never really liked the All-Stars, even though they had a couple of my favorite. Because they had the All-Stars because the one who won it, he actually won the season, the Russian dude. Who I actually like. I actually like that guy a lot. I'm like, why wouldn't I watch he's going to win it again after he already won? I always thought with Project Runway it's for people who didn't win.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of messed up a little twist they added.
Yeah.
Like, hey, some previous winners are going to compete as well.
Which
and
is
it's like those
that
winners
seems
are good.
That seems
that's
unfair.
Kind of, that's not
it
fair.
Is unfair. And
I mean, unless you're going to do all the Top Chef winners or all the All-Star Project Runway.
Ooh.
Like, I'd watch that, yeah.
I'd watch that, too.
If you could somehow magically get, like, Richard Blaze, I would love to see Richard Blaze go up against Paul Key.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a lot of fun.
I mean, he gets spanked. I think everyone would get spanked by Paul Key.
I think that's probably too. Yeah.
Especially some of those early ones. I mean, the competition seems to get better and better each year with these because, like, people have seen the other people of the past, and they know they have to step up their game to compete.
I thought this. The reason I liked this season of Top Chef is that I did think they had a couple of people in there early on that were like the most grating people. In the world.
The blonde woman.
She was bad.
Me
but
nuts.
The worst was Aaron.
Oh yeah,
That guy is going to be found in an alley with a body and a bloody knife somewhere.
Needed his ass.
He is a sociopath, a little entitled sociopath.
Yeah.
And I was so glad that he went. I was so happy when he finally went.
Yes.
And when he did, I loved that no one ever picked him again.
Right.
No one wanted him to be. No one. I mean, he basically pissed off everybody.
That douchebag in the
show. Yeah, that douchebag. Yeah. That nobody ever picked him for to sous chef for him.
Yes.
Nobody picked him for teams. He was out.
Yeah.
You know, he got his one shot on Last Chance Kitchen and that was it.
And he got his ass handed to him.
But other than that, I thought the field was pretty good this year. Gregory seemed to be running away with it very early on.
I think that's why I'm not mad. I should, before I was saying I hated it, I'm not mad at May. I'm mad at Gregory because he should not have lost
it. It was his show. It
he
was his to lose.
He had it, and then he just kind of slipped up.
It was his to lose.
Because he got on. Because sometimes every once in a while, okay, he did something wrong, and he was almost eliminated. I think that totally shook him because he never could make. He could never get back up from that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like the crazy thing is, like Dougie. I like Dougie, but I didn't think he was on that. He wasn't on Gregory's level.
No.
I like May. She wasn't on Gregory's level.
No.
I like Melissa. I'm not sure how she got so far in the competition.
Yeah.
All the people I thought everybody was good.
Yeah.
But Gregory was great. He was playing at a different level.
Yeah.
And then when he lost it, he just completely lost it.
Yeah. It was very. I'd never seen anything
crazy
like that.
Yeah. He just sort of lost his nerve.
And I guess I don't know. I'm just getting really annoyed by Padma. I don't know what she brings to the show.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is like Calicchio and Richard Blaze and those guys are experts.
Yeah.
Like when they talk, you get a sense like okay. They didn't like the food because of this. This was wrong. Padma just something pisses her off, and that's it.
Yeah, she's got no reasoning behind it.
And I understand she's been doing this a while, and she's probably got a decent palate, you know, and that kind of thing. But It's like having a table full of chefs and professional, you know, critics, and then a foodie.
Well, it'd be like having me, who, like, I don't eat cheese. I don't like dairy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to complain about some cheese dish.
Yeah.
It's like,
but you are sexy like Padma.
Yeah. Well, I am sexy like Padma. But I mean, you know, it's like, why is she there? I learned so much about food. That's why I think Top Chef and Project Runway are like the best, because the judges are the best.
Yeah.
They know their shit and they know it inside and out. Even though I still think the best person ever on any of the shows is still Tim Gunn. I think he just, the way he molds people. And I think that's what, it's like when I look at Padma and compare him to Tim Gunn.
Yeah.
Tim, you know, was a teacher, and he understands the motivations, and he understands what the judges are, and he still is himself. Where Padma is just like this bitchy woman.
Yeah,
you
really ought to have a mentor that's gonna guide you to become better.
Well,
I think that's one of the things, is that Tom Colicchio does take that. He is sort of the chiding judge. I mean, he wants them to do well, and you can read that in him all the time. Like he is giving them a hard time. You know, he's busting
like
their chops. But he's like a father figure. Yeah, he's trying. He's gonna grade them harshly. But he wants them all to do well.
Right.
And Padma, you just get the sense that she's there for the food.
She's there for the food. If you're not into her, she just doesn't. Yeah. She just holds that against you.
I don't know. The thing is, you need someone to be sort of the human face thing. You need someone who's not a chef.
Right.
But I feel like she's not the right person for the
role
anymore.
But I think these chefs are so big now, you don't need her.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd watch that show.
I think
for
most
Calico.
People need a non-chef entree into it. But I mean, I also thought I really missed Emeril, because Emeril was great on the New Orleans.
Yes, he was.
I wish they'd found like a. I think every time they go, I think Andy Greenwald said this Grantland.
Grantland.
That and I probably just messed up his name, but I think that they need to bring in a local chef.
Yeah,
who will be sort of the guide to the area, the mentor, and that kind of thing during the entire time.
Well, the interesting thing about Boston this season,
mm-hmm.
I mean, did you guys hear like that they got relocated for half the season?
No.
Yeah.
Is
that why they went to Mexico? Because I was wondering, like, why the hell?
They always do that at the end. They always go somewhere.
What happened is there was the episode where they went to a police commissioner, mayor, something or other.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And
I remember that.
And there was a strike going on at the time.
Ooh.
And so it ended up like having a lot of bad blood with the city because they had this crew working for the show.
Yeah.
People weren't supposed to be working, getting paid, and all this stuff.
I didn't know
that. What ended up happening is they kind of got kicked out of the city and they had to film the rest of it outside of Boston.
Oh, wow.
So pretty much after that episode, everything else was filmed outside of Boston, and they probably dropped back from highlighting the city as much. I'm guessing.
You know what's interesting, though, is
that was episode
maybe it was
two.
Just like
Boston.
B-roll.
It was episode two, Boston Bridge and Finest.
Wow. Yeah. So that must have been a change. The other thing, though, the thing I liked quite a bit about this season, I thought they did a really good job of changing the format.
Yes.
Like, there's been previous seasons, and the Paul Key season was definitely one of them, where there's so much gimmickry going on.
That was weird.
That we never get to see them cook.
Right.
All we get to see is how well they can.
The Texas thing was painful.
How well you can improvise, you know, how can you cook on a camp stove outside when you have nothing? How can you cook popcorn on a barge? Right. I'm like, who gives a fuck?
So they weren't trying to, like, test that.
No.
How well they do when they're, like, exhausted.
They did not do a lot. There was no foil challenge.
And you know what I do like is that there wasn't, like, you have to cook this particular thing.
Yeah.
They all kind of, it was all like philosophy and show us what you can do.
Yeah.
So I think that made it a more even competition because, if you're going to be, if you don't cook, you've not trained in the French style of cooking, and then they tell you to do this, it's just not fair because, you know, or like, it's kind of like, I think that's one of the reasons why my favorite guy of all time with the Mexican-Japanese guy.
Oh, yeah.
He was so weird.
Great.
But he had his own thing.
Katsuji.
Yeah, Katsuji, which he won.
That was nuts.
He was nuts. And he won one because he did what he did really well. But then as soon as it kind of branched, if it branched out to something different, then there's no way he was going to shine. And I always find that weird because most of these people all have their own restaurant and are relatively successful. So it's got to be kind of weird to go on that show and say, wait, I don't do this and I'm going to be judged on this and fuck that. I just go back to my restaurant. You know?
I also liked that, like, every year every show I've ever watched, there's been someone where somebody gets eliminated who shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And then someone who should not be there gets to coast on the, like, near the bottom.
Yeah.
All the way to the end of the show. They set this up where basically there was one of the private chefs, who almost always are the weakest chefs.
Yeah, they're always a weak chef.
She had to choose one of the people who had been eliminated.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like an immediate elimination. Yes. Like yes. She either won this challenge or she was out and the other guy was back in.
Right.
And
right.
That was interesting. And then they brought another guy back in later
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
I mean, on top of Last Chance Kitchen, they had several people come back into the competition.
Well, I do like the challenge.
Which I thought was really good.
I do like the challenge of, like, who do you think you could take out? I love
yeah,
that challenge.
Yeah, I did too.
Cool.
It's very aggressive and sort of...
she lost.
Yeah.
She got her ass...
Well, it's really aggressive. Yeah. And I love the idea of them... I mean, you don't want to turn this into a hair-pulling, you know, MTV-style thing.
Right.
But a little more... Pick which person. Go ahead. We know
and
you're thinking of. Tell us which person you think
and
you're better
than. It was the asshole who yeah. actually won that
yeah.
one.
So they changed something else as well with the judging this year,
yeah.
which
yeah.
they would bring everyone in. I'm not sure if they continue the Super
yeah,
season.
They did.
Yeah, they did.
So
yeah.
they'd bring everyone in
yeah.
in order to have them all hear the praise and the negative things.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of everyone was getting a lecture
yeah.
and seeing what they need to look out for and to improve their game,
yeah.
which I think is really great.
Yeah.
The one thing I kind of missed mm-hmm. was the idea that they would come in and talk to them and then send them back so they could deliberate.
Yeah.
And I'm
yeah.
not sure if they decided, you know what, we're deliberating based on what they say after the fact, but
yeah.
we need to really base it on just the
what
food.
The food
so
is, yeah.
We need to be able
yeah.
to make that decision.
Yeah.
But sometimes I liked that they would listen to them and have to take that into consideration and be like, well, it turns out that they made a bad meal because there was something off of their dynamic.
Right.
Someone else screwed them over.
Right.
And something that we didn't know from behind the scenes.
Well, right. there's that, but I do. But it's more merit based. So it's like you have no excuses. You
yeah.
know, just do it. And I mean, I think this. What is this season? What 15? 10?
I don't even know.
Season 12. I'm actually
yeah.
looking at it. So after a while. If we know, I mean, Helena and I will sit and watch it and
like
okay.
Don't pick that guy for your team.
Don't
what
pick
are you
the
doing?
Guy. Oh, wait, you're buying okay, you're going to lose because that's going to come up. You're buying pre-processed something.
Yeah.
Don't mess up a burger. Cook your fish all the way.
Yeah.
There's certain things that you just know are going to piss these people off.
Yep.
And then they can't, like, basic things. And if I know it and I'm not a chef and I
yeah.
just am watching it,
yeah.
these people all
should
know each other. They should
well,
know.
And the other thing is, this isn't top cook, it's top chef.
Exactly.
And part of being a chef
right.
is knowing how to work with a team.
Exactly.
And being
good point.
Assertive for
and
your
being
own.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's totally fair. If the dish doesn't come out, it doesn't matter that you can say, oh, well, this person didn't salt. I mean, that's why Kristen Kish, who ultimately wound up winning Top Chef,
yeah.
took the heat for Sarah, who totally fucked her.
Right.
Because she knew that, hey, I was the chef. It was my thing, and I didn't keep a close eye on this
right.
fuck up.
Right.
And therefore, it is my fault, and I should go home. I mean, yes, the fuck up should have gone home instead.
Right.
But... that's not the way the world works in Top Chef, and that's not the way the world works in a kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you should give the win to the shitty sous chef.
Yeah,
sous chef instead of me.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because I'm gonna fall on my sword.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So overall,
I watch it. I liked it.
I really liked it.
The seasons. What do you think?
I think this was my favorite outside of All Star. To be honest,
really.
Yeah.
This is my favorite because I thought as a whole there was more. I couldn't tell. Until Gregory started really kicking ass, and even when he was just so much better than everybody else.
Yeah,
everybody else was okay.
Everybody else was fighting for second.
Yeah.
Everybody else was fighting for second.
But they were all really good, though.
Yeah, but there was nobody who were like, oh, what's this guy doing here?
Yeah.
I mean, even Aaron, who I hated, and blonde girl, who I don't remember her name,
yeah,
I thought both of them had talent.
Yeah. Yeah, they had talent, but and it wasn't so, like, I don't know, it just wasn't catty. It was just like they're all just seriously cooking, and then when they're all watching each other cook and, you know, talk, and I kind of like the fact that a lot of them worked together and knew each other.
Yeah.
Something about that, I thought that was
kind of
cool.
Yeah, I like that too.
So, Project Runway All-Stars,
mm-hmm.
it had its fourth season. I mean, it's not a great show.
Well, you know what it is?
It's trashy.
It's because... no offense to Alyssa Milano, but she's not that great of a host. She's not that great of a host. I don't think she knows shit about fashion, really.
I don't know what the hell she was wearing while she was pregnant.
Yeah,
it was like every outfit she wore was like the worst thing I've ever seen
right,
on a person.
And Isaac, Mizrahi. Yeah, he's been washed up for 20 years. He was like the shit. He was like the awesome designer from the '90s. And then something just, like, he didn't change. And then he just kind of fell off the planet. And then I don't even know who the other judge is. Or...
Georgina Chapman. I think she's kind of got the most class of any of them.
Okay.
But Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the judges, but there's something about All Stars that I really like, whether it's Top Chef or Project Runway, just bringing back these people that already know the game.
Yeah.
And they can kind of hit the floor running, and so you can kind of expect a better degree of talent to be displayed from all of them, and I like that. It kind of pushes each of them to deliver a little bit better.
I like that. It's just, I just wish it had the same judges. But in one way, I can see why they don't, because the same prejudices those judges would have against them. Like, you know, when Heidi or like Michael Kors hated you, you weren't really going to win them over because they didn't like your style.
Well, I mean, for all of the complaints we were having about Padma, I would say that their mentor, who is Marie Claire's senior fashion editor, Zana Roberts-Zassi, is awesome.
Oh, no, I love her.
She is just as good as well, maybe not just as good as Tim Gunn, but she's still right up there.
No, I think she's great.
She knows how to just really pinpoint what they need to do, and she's like really editorial with, like, you need to fix this and this, and you'll be a lot better off.
Yeah.
And I think it's great to watch her do that. So... yeah, I mean, I watched this one so much more than the other show. Well, I really enjoyed it all the way up to the end.
Well, okay.
Still, I agree. It's bullshit that they brought in some winners.
But I do like, I mean, Dimitri, who I thought was great, and I just like, he's going to win because he's that good, and he hasn't slipped any yet. And when I saw him, like, he'll probably win. I hated Michelle from Portland season 11.
I like her a lot. I think she's hilarious. Oh, I think she's got such great wit about her.
And then and I'm looking at the list now. They brought it back, and me and Helene used to say
you and Heidi.
Me and Heidi. I was looking at Heidi Klum, but Patricia Michaels from Taos, and we always call this is terrible. We always call like the Hopi Indian woman. She made all the everything was based
in
Native American lady, who just like
really crazy weird
stuff. Bizarre.
I don't know
crazy
why she continued going on.
I think there's something
she had no polish to any of her work,
and there was something because she took way too much time to like I'm gonna hand make this whole thing. You're like, honey, you have 24 hours, you don't really need to make the make this by hand. And she had such a distinct style that what I liked about her though is that she did what she did, and that's what she was, and so she didn't complain.
Well, like, this is I think they have a good system with their shows, that they have the All-Stars, and then they have the regular show, and they're able to just kind of kick back and forth. I do agree they need to do something better about their judges on the show, and it just seemed like really budget and cheap. Like, they had no money.
That's what it is.
And they, like, at the end, the final challenge, it was just like, hey, you have 4 days, and you're just going to do a private event for your challenge. I was like, well, what's the point?
So what do they win?
A bunch more money, another little contract to be like working with some of those studios, being an advisor, or whatever.
I'll tell you, it is amazing when you look at the prizes for both of these things. It's like, man, these advertisers are throwing money. Just like, they win like $500,000. They get this car. They get this contract. Who's giving this?
Have that Red Robin.
It's like, who's giving this money away? It's like, it's crazy. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's something about cooking. I mean, I'm into fashion a lot. I'm getting to be more of a foodie than I was, partially because of you guys, but I mean, just more like going to check out new restaurants. And because
you got that steady job.
Yeah, well, you know, that helps. You know what? Yeah, having income really does work.
Suddenly you're like, I want better food.
I want better food. I can actually go to a nice restaurant now without having.
It can be a luxury.
Without having to play the restaurant. But it's like, it's something about those two processes when you see people who are really good at it that you can actually pull ideas from too for yourself.
Yeah.
That I think this is why these two really work for me personally above, like, The Voice. I when I watch, I can't deal with it because there's so many other things.
I used to be able to do like American Idol when I would see that those few individuals that weren't just doing karaoke, but they would actually have this really creative spin on how they would deliver themselves and they would adapt songs. And I was like, okay, you guys are way above the fray, but.
And you see people, I mean, there are a lot of people in this world.
It's very superficial, those shows, but who can more so.
Well, there are people, there are a lot of people who can sing. I'm not that impressed with great voices anymore because there are a lot, and maybe just, I've been playing for too long. I just know a lot of people who can really sing. What the only thing that intrigued me was when Harry Connick went off on a couple years ago, I think, on talking about the phrasing of songs and why some of the people don't, like, why singers aren't as good. you know, because they're not getting the phrasing of the way, like, Frank Sinatra, when they're doing standards, they don't understand it, and they don't go back and they didn't go back and study the history. And that's where that's what pulled Harry Connick Jr., because he was a mentor, and it was driving him nuts. And they thought, hey, why don't you judge it? Because then maybe you can, you know, help these people along. But I don't know. I don't know if that's, I haven't watched it since.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, Top Chef and Project Runway is still probably the only competition shows I'll watch. I mean, I gave up on Face Off.
You guys have that one other one, that Best Restaurant.
Best New Restaurant.
Well, I kind of started watching it, but then it got lost in the TV and just watching too much TV. So
you've been watching it.
It became some of my background TV. Yeah. You know, it's the methadone for my Top Chef heroin addiction.
Yeah. Well, it's all Colicchio all the time.
It's Colicchio. Yeah, it's Colicchio going to restaurants and he pits two restaurants against each other. They do a pressure test where they bring in 30 customers and they have to serve appetizers, entree, dessert in 2 hours to everybody. So it's like a test of how they do, and like I really if they get really slammed.
Yeah. Right.
And then they send in a secret diner to check them again. Okay. And then they bring them both to New York where they have to compete against each other where they each have to serve.
Just the head chefs?
No, it's a team of the head chef, the front of house, and their sous chef, basically.
Wow. Oh,
so it's kind of like Restaurant Wars.
Yeah, but. It's like Restaurant Wars.
That's cool. But
people actually run restaurants.
It's really fun. I wasn't sure about it at first.
And each episode is just a two, they don't have like a
each episode
finale.
Is two restaurants, okay. And then they make it to the semifinals, one of each.
Right.
And they're going to pit those against each other, and then there'll be finals.
Okay. All right.
But every episode, and I believe this is the one that they filmed this in Austin. Like, we could have gone to some of these restaurants had we known.
There was one of the restaurants we were looking up. Like, was this the one with the woman? Like the man was from South America or something like that.
Yeah.
But have you been to that restaurant?
I've not been to any of these restaurants, but okay. I'm going to at least three of them now because they look really good. But it's an Austin restaurant, and it seems like a Miami restaurant. It seems like they're Austin versus Miami restaurant scene. The restaurants all look really good, and this is great for them because it's great publicity. Like I say, I added three restaurants to my list to try out. Mm-hmm. Austin's mostly getting its ass kicked.
Really?
Yeah, it's too bad, but they have been. It's looked mostly. I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, it's Austin restaurants and Miami restaurants mostly. And at the end, the restaurateurs go to New York. They each have a dinner service, and then Colicchio and his two sort of guest diners. One of them's a food blogger, one of whom sort of runs a food, you know, Groupon type service. They sort of make the judgment about who's going on. Like I say, it's very Top Chef light. You don't get a lot of the meat and potatoes of cooking that Top Chef gives you.
Right.
It is more of a how restaurants run. Like they really go into the front of the house stuff that you don't see a lot of on Top Chef until they do Restaurant Wars, where some poor chef has to do front of the house. You know, they actually show that front of the house is a skill, and I think that's interesting.
Well, as a consumer, I've worked. Have you ever worked in a restaurant?
I mean, I was a waiter for like a month.
Yeah,
that was enough.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked in a couple when I was younger, and you know, like just not like any top end dining, but you know, we had like just like a regular restaurant, and it is a skill. I mean, one time I had to try to cover the front, and I'm like, fuck this. And I was like 19 anyway. I'm like, I can't do any of this crap because somebody didn't show up.
Yep.
But yeah, that is, and then but as a consumer as well. Like, we go to restaurants, and that whole experience of where you go, why you go, and, you know, how they treat you, and the table, like, the way it's laid out. Like, I just ate at Cover 3 before I got here, and, I mean, it's okay. You know, it's just something, because it's close to where we live.
Yeah.
It's a local restaurant here in Austin. But it's like, you know, they just kind of rushed us in. They gave us a shitty seat. I hated the way the seats are just laid out, because I know that you have to maximize the floor space.
It makes you so much more aware of every little detail.
But it's like, this seat sucks. It's right by here. The waitress didn't come the way she should. And you just know all those things now. So I do appreciate when an expert like Colicchio comes in and says, no, this is the way you got to do it. It's like that one. Do you ever see that one guy from Australia or New Zealand, a big muscular guy on a... I think Food Network. He's always like going to rescue restaurants. I think it's Restaurant and Rescue or something like that. Really good if you like that, because he just goes and takes shitty restaurants and says, "This is what you have to do." Yells at them and stuff.
Gordon Ramsay thing.
Yeah, but he's
Kitchen Nightmares.
No.
Oh, he was doing it.
There's one on Food Network too. It's like.
But you know that he's like a big Australian dude.
Greg, you're thinking of Crocodile Dundee.
Oh, is he blonde?
Yeah.
Oh, no. The guy from that pops up on Top Chef occasionally?
No. He's
no. It's not Curtis Stone.
No. He's big. No, he's like
maybe this guy's British.
He looks like he reminds me of like if Hugh Jackman was doing it, you know. Yeah. But anyway, but
Hugh Jackman's Restaurant Rescue. I'd watch that.
I'd watch that too.
Well, it sounds like what you need is some hacks.
Yes.
Or eating at restaurants.
Yes.
Which brings us to our last show. We're going to discuss hacking the system.
Hacking the segue.
Thank you.
Did you see that one?
Hacking the restaurant one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
I loved it. It was great.
They just wrapped up their 10-episode first season. That's excluding the two initial little pilot tester episodes that they also did. And pretty good. I mean, that show, it's got such great pacing. It's on National Geographic for anyone who hasn't caught it. But they're playing reruns like all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, it's very quick paced. They have all these little bite-sized segments. They really started highlighting the relationship and the dynamic between Jason and Brian.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I see these elements of the personality between them I want to see more of that.
One of my favorite things was the episode that Jason's barely in, but the survival episode.
Yeah.
Where they decided to spray each other in the face with pepper spray.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was great. Or even just when they're doing like when they did the restaurant one where Jason goes in like a schlub and then Brian goes in with his suit on.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jason gets terrible service. I mean, we have the advantage of knowing Jason and just knowing how surly he can be. So watching him on screen simmering when you're like, you know, he just wants his curse. He wants to be Jason. I get off on that and I'm like, this is great and I'm happy for him for his success and stuff. But Brian is funny.
Yeah.
And he's engaging even when he's screwing you, like when he did the mechanic one, we had the woman who was screwing at.
Yeah.
And she goes, "Oh, I'm sorry." You know,
when he was cutting in line?
Yeah.
at Pink's hot dog stand.
Yeah.
He was trying to cut in line and like show how you could do that.
Yeah.
And it was funny because like you see the people on the show getting that.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of watching their little live thing and they're like, "Go hashtag tweet hacking the system." Yeah. So I checked and he was getting like a lot of angry people like, "Hey, fuck you, dude. I can't believe if you ever tried to cut in front of me, I'd believe."
But what he did was 100%. And I'm like, I'm going to try that. Like, "Hey man, I only got this." And it worked.
You're teaching people to be assholes.
No, I love it because it's like he does it, but he's not a bad guy. So you can only do it for so long. Cause then he starts laughing like, "Okay, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to protect you from this." Like when he did the street vending thing with Jason.
Yeah.
We had everybody there and Jason was pickpocketing everybody.
Or he's doing a cold reading, like pretending to be a psychic.
Yeah.
He's like,
that was terrible.
I'm just guessing. I'm just kind of fucking with you guys. And it was like missing a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But it was terrible because the guy's like, my grandfather. I don't know. I love stuff like that. Brian does a great job because he's charming and he's funny. He's quick.
Yeah.
And just with Jason as his sidekick, as his angry sidekick who gets shit on all the time. This is great.
I really hope we get to see it. I would assume we're getting a second season because
I would think so.
I think it did pretty well.
I think hopefully
it's hard to see the numbers on cable. Some of these,
but I think National Geographic, if they're patient, you know, and realize that this is a building thing, they keep building it.
I mean, they could have this dynamic and something that kind of builds akin to maybe even Mythbusters, them kind of trying more elaborate type hacks. And
I mean,
stuff
they're kind of like Penn and Teller, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They have like this really, you have one really super boisterous guy. I mean, obviously Jason's not silent, but it's just funny to see them go back and forth and the advice they give you is really great. I mean, with the house, the apocalyptic one or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like the stuff about how to make a candle, how to make a little grill, and
how to drink your pee.
Drink your pee or drink or drink your apple juice. Well, it was great. And watch it. It's really entertaining. They're quick. Even like the little Mission Impossible-esque type soundtrack music is great.
Yeah.
And they're funny. Like the driving one was funny when he was what is it? When he what did he do with Jason? Jason was all angry on the road.
Oh,
the
traffic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I was thinking when he got him hit, basically.
Yes, when he got him hit. Yes.
Then he stole his car.
He stole his car. Yeah, it was cool. And then
a lot of angry, impotent rage, Jason.
Yes, which is always great television.
Such a delight. All right. Well, hey, you know what? We usually talk about Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
Did you see it? Yeah. Did you see last night?
You guys want to talk about that for a few minutes?
I would like to talk about Better Call Saul.
All right, let's talk about
it. You saw last night, right?
Spoilers for the latest episode of Better Call Saul.
Yes.
This episode was called, I don't remember.
It's Hero.
Hero.
Exactly. Oh, man. Okay. Did you guys tweet to it immediately?
No.
Did you know immediately what was going on? Because as soon, I didn't know what he was doing when he was setting up the video. I thought, okay, he's going to make some kind of thing. But then as soon as the guy fell, I'm like, oh, he set this all up.
No, as soon as the guy fell, I was like, oh, this is going to totally work to his advantage.
Yeah.
I didn't go, oh, he set it up.
I was laughing as he climbed that ladder because I was sure he set it up.
I knew he set it up because of the intro, which was
they clue.
Genius.
The intro was great.
I mean, you got everything you needed for the show.
Yeah.
You got... And that whole thing, I never thought of that as his name.
Yeah.
It's all good, man. I mean, I was like...
He said that in Breaking Bad.
Yeah, but I just... It came back to me, though. I was like, that's genius. And then, and then when that guy got up, Helene went, oh, my God, he's going to hit him. And I thought, oh, my God, he is. And then when they just slapped hands, like, oh, yeah, why that did I one, see that? Why didn't I see that coming?
I did not spot that one as a fake. That was a good one.
That was
Kevin Weissman as his Mark was great. I love that guy.
Yes.
And the guy who played his accomplice, I thought it was Ethan Suplee at first. Yeah.
No.
But it wasn't. It's
that dude from Running Wild or whatever that show called.
He's in a bunch of stuff. He was on the military show that Johnny hated.
Oh, yeah.
That I liked. Enlisted.
Enlisted, yeah.
He was Chabowski.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is kind of like the Star Wars guy named Porkins. It's just mean. but I really liked him, and I love that bit. And, yeah, it's nice to see. Okay, so Saul Goodman is a thing he came up with a long time ago to avoid telling Marx his real name.
Right.
Yeah. So that's going to come up. I actually thought they were going to... I thought they were going to go to Saul Goodman like now. When he showed the billboard,
right.
I thought that he would like, okay, are they going to go?
Exactly.
Jump to
I thought he was just going to take the money and rebrand himself.
Yeah, yeah.
But instead, it looks like he's just going to
screw
messing with them and maybe get them to buy him out.
I don't know what his endgame is. He may just be pissed at this point and just, there's the money and is just trying to screw with them. Mm-hmm. But I knew what was going on. I was laughing as he climbed that ladder because I'm like, oh, man, I know this is a setup. And I thought that was hilarious.
The show is, we say it about shows all the time, but the show's like nothing else on TV.
It really is.
And it's except for Breaking Bad, which was no longer on TV.
But even that, it's different from Breaking Bad. It's of a piece, but it's still a very different show.
I think for me, it has a little bit of a different tone.
Yeah, I think I like it a little bit. Now, I wouldn't say better. It relates. I relate more to it because
you like it differently.
I like it differently because it's not serious. It's like we already have what this guy's about, so you know the guy's kind of an ass clown.
Yeah.
But you want to see how he becomes a great ass clown, and in the beginning of that, and because Odenkirk is so good,
he's really good.
I mean, I knew he was good, but. Like when he's doing, you know, setting up in the beginning of the show, he's just so smooth. I was like, man, this guy is good.
I also think it's interesting that the Saul that we know would not have balked a second at taking that money from
that woman. Of
course not. And he's
trying really hard to be good. He's trying not to go back to his slippin' Jimmy ways.
Right.
And I think that's the struggle. Whereas Walt sort of decided to be a bad guy early on.
Walt was a bad guy.
And
he's always a bad guy.
But seeing Jimmy try not to be Saul Goodman, we know he's going to fail. We know where he was going. Yeah.
It's funny because the writers are completely fucking with our presumptions.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel like they set up that scene and they knew that we thought,
they would think that,
here we go.
Yep.
You know that he's going to just turn it on and he doesn't.
Nope.
It's always fascinating because it goes where I don't expect
and
it
to go. And it's the slow build on the relationship between him and Mike that I'm really liking.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that this is. It's sort of. We've talked about the Flash, and this is a weird comparison to make. I know, but the Flash it's like just pedal to the metal, doing everything. Like they're throwing all the fan service, all that. They're you know giving his identity out to everybody. Like they are going full on at everything.
Yeah,
Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul is the opposite. They are playing it very slow, taking as much time as they want to get where they want to go. And I think that's real. And it's what's really interesting is that tone works for both shows.
How many episodes do they have this year?
10. It's a 10-episode run.
Okay.
Really? Not 13?
10-episode.
It's not enough for me.
I love this show. I'm surprised how much I love this show.
They're hitting it out with this one. It's really, really good.
I like his our on again, off again, Kim from the law firm.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I love that smile on her face.
And his dad or his brother's crazy run outside to get that was a paper. Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the camera work.
That was so well done. Yeah.
Just him looking like such a crazy loser.
Yeah,
that was good.
Well, and I love that they cut back and show the old woman watching him.
Yes.
Yeah. And we see just how crazy he looked.
Yeah.
There's like he's just a crazy man with a silver blanket.
Yeah. It's the show is. It's great. Yeah. It's really great. And Vince Gilligan, genius.
Yeah, this is another great episode. By the way, I was going to mention to you guys, I started listening to the Breaking Bad Insider podcast, or the Breaking Bad Insider podcast when they did Breaking Bad.
Uh-huh.
Kelly Dixon, one of their lead editors, used to do a podcast, and she'd bring in Vince Gilligan a lot of the times, and other writers and directors and stars and all that kind of thing. And they'd talk about each episode. Well, they're doing one called Better Call Saul Insider. There's three episodes up so far, and it's Kelly Dixon running it, and they bring in the first episode has Peter Gould and Vince Gilligan.
Oh, cool.
And Bob Odenkirk.
Wow. Mm.
It's really good, and it's a really interesting talk behind the scenes. They're really engaging, they're really fun. They're like hour long episodes. Definitely worth checking out.
What's that once again?
Better Call Saul Insider.
All right. Oh,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, okay, guys, that's our show. Thank you, Randy and Greg.
Thank you. Thank you, Grant.
Thank you, listening audience. Be sure to like us on Facebook and on Twitter. Also go to iTunes and Stitcher and wherever else. Milk on
everywhere.
Amazon, everywhere.
Milk. Yeah, make sure to review Milk on Amazon. I want to see those reviews.
Yes.
Give us those ratings, 5 stars, and write a review for the iTunes one at least, and we will read it on the show. And until next week, put your comments in the comment system. Please go to the site and comment. We love engaging with you guys, talking about this stuff. Until next week, guys.
TV Dudes out.